SIU President Randy Dunn joining us this morning. First off, Chief, it's good to see you again.
Also, your News Radio WJPF traffic reporter.
That's right. He really is multi-talented when it comes to that. Randy was texting me going, it looks like it's right on the bridge.
Yep.
And with the maps here.
It's a long, thin parking lot.
It's a Route 13 long, thin parking lot. It is. And that means somebody's spending extra quality time with you this morning.
Yes, that's right.
If you're trying to drive westbound on 13, thanks for joining us. I hardly know where to start. How about let's start with something fun?
Okay.
Saturday night.
Yes, that was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
You know what's interesting? You kind of get you disenfranchised and you kind of get, you know, and then something like Saturday night,
yes.
Nick Hill and the guys.
Yes, I know. They did an outstanding job. It was great to be there and watch that. I think it's a great harbinger for the season. Of course, everyone from Southern Illinois wants Nick to succeed so much. He's put his heart and soul into Saluki football. We get out of there with a great deal of pride, and it was just fun to be part of it. And in addition, SIU Alumni Association had done a pregame activity. Part of that was to meet the new chancellor, of course, who was down there. Nice crowd for that event. We actually have a lot of alums in the Memphis area. And just a wonderful day. And short of that 100-yard return that Pollard from Memphis did, who knows how things would have gone.
And that face-masking penality.
Well, that too,
there at a crucial time.
That was critical, wasn't it?
But on the other hand, I did employ my lip-reading skills.
I understand.
Actually, Nick used the exact same word I would have used. Well, a chain of them.
What was funny, so for most of the game, of course, the visiting athletic director and leadership, they have a box, and you can go in that box, you can go out with fans and kind of go back and forth. So anyway, right outside the box where a number of us were, they had a microphone hanging to pick up the crowd noise, all right? Voice of the Memphis Tigers or whatever wanted to get the ambient noise. So there was a microphone there. We decided we better shut the window so we weren't part of that ambient crowd noise after a couple of those plays went on.
Yeah, hot mics can always
come up and
grab you and bite you. But yeah, because here's the thing, I read this statistic, and it's been a while back, why students pick universities.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either 76 or 78% of polls, college students said that the success of the athletic program is a major decision, major role in their decision making whether they should attend.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, there's a line that you hear a lot of presidents and chancellors use in talking about athletics, particularly Division I athletics, where you really have to make a serious investment as a university if you're going to have success in the program. That is the nature of Division I. But anyway, the line is that athletics, while it cannot be the tail that wags the dog, it is, now this is mixing analogies now, but it is an entree to the university. It's the front porch of the university that can pull so many students in. When you have a great season, a great run, you get a chance to go to the big dance in Division I basketball. All of these things contribute to a sense of the institution.
General awareness.
That you couldn't buy that
right.
kind of recognition for. Kind of like the eclipse.
Well, you could buy it. You just couldn't afford
it. You couldn't afford it. That's right.
And like the eclipse, I think that's an actual parallel, actually,
yes.
Because
yes.
It's seeing it on screen, legitimacy, yeah. And then the thought that if I go, I get to be on a winning team,
yes.
And in the herd mentality that we really have a lot, you want to be
well,
with the herd's safe.
I really do subscribe to that notion. Not that I'm a psychologist, I'm not. But if you look at people's...
How can you be an administrator of a university?
I'm an armchair psychologist then. That's right. But, you know, there is this notion of you want to be part of a tribe. That's why people have loyalty to, you know, their professional sports teams and college sports teams.
Safety.
It's human nature.
Safety in the tribe.
That's right.
And approval.
We're hardwired
in
there somehow for that.
Very much so. It's a survival
trait. That's right.
It is. First budget in 3 years.
Yes, we'll make that work.
I think you got done around September 15, 17, somewhere in there?
Yeah, we ended up in the budget deal that was done this summer, we ended up taking a 10% haircut fiscal year 18. So you do recall that that budget deal did us a budget for 17 that basically treated us pretty well, and then a 10% haircut in 18. We can make that work. We are making it work, given the reductions that had taken place at each of the campuses. In fact, I spent yesterday a good chunk of the day in a meeting, pretty long meeting with the three campus CEOs, Carbondale, new Chancellor Carlo Montemagno, Edwardsville Chancellor, and then the Dean and Provost of the School of Medicine in Springfield. We had a big roundup meeting, kind of went through everything as the year got started. And given the reductions that have been made through this, some of those were too much, but many we could handle, and it was appropriate to make them. We can make this state budget work.
Great.
We'll be able to navigate, and what it does, as I've mentioned before, it unfreezes operations. We were just afraid to do anything, spend a dollar.
All right, can I give you an example of where I see this?
Yes.
Right? I'm going off memory here. I believe an expansion SIU School of Medicine into Fulton County?
Yes. In fact, that's exactly right. So I was a week ago yesterday up in Canton, Illinois, and the School of Medicine out of Springfield runs a number of regional program offices. Now, these are not big clinics or
they're
anything
outreaches.
Like that. They're outreach offices, and what they do is put together medical preparation, health occupation programs for high schools. They help hospitals recruit doctors. They do health and wellness training programs. And in this case, in Fulton County, up in Canton and Lewiston area, it's taking the SIU brand up there. As I've said, that is our most northwesternly outpost in Illinois, but I went up there to take a look at it, see what they're doing, met with the hospital CEO in this small town of Canton up in northwestern Illinois, and it's going to be a game changer for what happens around health and wellness in that area, and it's SIU bringing that change to that community.
I can
and
only hope. I had a friend
stuff
of mine
like that all the time.
Who took his scholarship,
yeah.
Right, state of Illinois, be
yes.
a doctor.
Yes.
Well, the deal was if you did the scholarship and you got the scholarship, you had to practice X number of years
exactly.
in Illinois. Well,
exactly.
they went and got him while he was at John Hopkins and saying, you got to come
wow.
back, University of Chicago,
yes.
right? I can think some of these more programs. I want to see these medical professionals stay here in the state of Illinois.
Absolutely.
Because we need them. We have so much to talk about, so I'm going to move forward. I got to hit something personal with
that's
you
That's fine.
Okay?
I never know what to expect, Tom, when I'm in.
Well, when it comes to personal with you, it's still about college. It's still about SIU. I watched the video last week of a college student trying to commit suicide by cop. Did you see it?
I didn't
Shoot
see the video.
Me.
I read about it.
You read it, right?
Yes,
I watched
see
the video. It's disturbing
yes.
content, right? And you can't see part of the time the tree, but he's shoot me. He's got the knife. They're
yeah,
doing everything
yeah,
they
right.
can. And I'm sitting there with my significant other. I said, you know what happens.
Hmm.
You know, sometimes you have people, there's a certain percentage anywhere you go, there's somebody that's got a problem.
That's
or
right.
more than one
that's
problem.
That's right.
And it doesn't matter if you are at the university and you know this young man has a problem, and he clearly does. You think, what am I going to do about it? Well, we'll call his parents. Well, you can't. There are a lot of restrictions on how you handle someone
yes.
on the campus. Now, whenever I talk about this from this case, you know, you think, well, let's call his family.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we
mm-hmm.
can get him appropriate help. You can't do it. It's against the law. And then you take a look at
Tom, there are a few exceptions there. I mean,
are there?
Yeah, I mean,
suicide? Self-destructive behavior?
I don't want to start parsing out every case, but there are ways to make those contacts and get that done. Now, you are right. The federal law, which we refer to as FERPA, does limit a great deal what we can report out to parents and that type of thing. But if you've got a question of health care and needing to provide assistance to a student, we've got the ability to do
well,
that.
Well, if you had a heart attack or got run over the
that
street.
You contact the parents.
But,
you get a hold of them.
Mental illness.
So then if there has been clinical care provided, say, in a counseling center on campus, then you're right. Then you're in another story. You might have the HIPAA health care guidelines, which are for privacy protection. You might have the educational record guidelines. I say guidelines. These are federal laws that we have to abide by on privacy protection. And yes, that could well be the case that a student's been seen at a counseling center or clinical center in the case of what we have at SIU Carbondale. There are a couple of different routes a student can go, as well as to go into the community for care. And it may be the case that we would be limited in what we can share with parents.
Okay, yes. Then what disposition does this put you in with this new polling survey information psychological data that basically 18-year-olds or 15-year-olds, so that makes a 21-year-old an 18-year-old, and that makes a 21-year-old, right? We are dealing,
yes,
with someone, a group that, according to information from the medical world, they are not as mature.
Yes.
Does that put you in an even more difficult position, especially from a psychological standpoint?
Yes, there's no doubt about it.
Did you read this new survey data information?
There's no doubt about it. And I think part of that becomes then how we change at the university the manner in which we work with these students, how we do the student life piece of it. You know, for instance, if a student is going to reside in one of our residence halls,
yeah,
one of our dorms, you want programming to go with that to respond to that. It's not the case that we can necessarily sit and bemoan what clinicians and others are seeing. We have to figure out a way how to deal with that, how to respond to it. So if you would talk to our housing people, whether it's here at Carbondale or Edwardsville, they put a great deal of time and care into the programming, student programming, that goes into working with those students while they're living in one of our halls or dorms. And in fact, a quick aside, one of the reasons that housing people always get somewhat concerned when you talk about going to a public-private partnership for housing or essentially going to a third-party provider for housing, is housing professionals get really worried that they're going to lose the ability to have access to those kids to do this type of training, to do this type of development, to have their people in to serve as an early warning system when they see a student in trouble and get a referral made.
Right.
So you've got that element of it. There is university-wide an early referral system. If a prof sees something, one of the challenges to make sure that the profs remember this every year.
Right.
They know how to make the contact if they see type of behavior in the classroom that gives them pause. And you're really trying to get everybody on point as kind of a wraparound service to get the call made, to do the referral, to do whatever. I would submit, Tom, and maybe this is a bit of overstatement because we can always do more. The issue, and I'm not talking about society as a whole. I'm talking about the university. The issue that we have, and I think is probably shared by a number of other institutions, is it isn't that we don't have means to provide services, whether it's kind of counseling light or more intensive mental health stuff, or getting a referral out for severe care that may be needed. Getting the care isn't the problem, although we can always use more counselors and that type of
right
thing. It's rather getting the university community, whether it's a residential advisor, whether it's a faculty member, whether it's somebody who's a coach in athletics or someone in a resource center, to do the connect to get the help for that student. Maybe first to reach out and have a conversation and then figure out, okay, who do I call? How do I do an early alert? How do I counsel this student? That's our biggest challenge. And I will say this. I do think, it's kind of the 80-20 rule. There are 20% that don't attend to this. But I will tell you, as I go around all of our campuses, 80% of the people at the university get it. They know that this is kind of an implicit responsibility that they got in their jobs to watch out for this kind of stuff, because you never know if you extrapolate out what the ultimate outcome of that is. They're good-hearted people, and there's also self-interest in making sure that we're not the next campus that gets reported when you pull up the world news.
You mean there's safety in tribes?
Yes.
Isn't that odd enough?
Yes.
That's coming
come
up again
circle.
As a
that's
as a,
right.
As a tra- All right, so let's take the next logical progression from there. Betty DeVos, Secretary of Education, sending out these new guidelines saying that some of the people who've been accused of sexual assault, that they were being rolled over a little bit, that's my word, that there need to be considerations now for the accused, a balance there, which, of course, in this country is a fundamental issue. It appears as though from what you had done under the Obama era rules, there had to be very little adaptation to the new guidelines supplied last week by DeVos.
I think what you're saying is on point. Yes. So a couple of things, I suppose, come to the surface on this. One of which is, as listeners have been maybe reading about this in the press, the guidance that we had from Secretary DeVos was a little garbled. It wasn't really clear, and sometimes even contradictory. It came out in the form of a Q&A, a question and answer sheet. That was the guidance. So in some ways, I think, I'm glad to see this being looked at, I think some of us were hopeful of a little more concrete, specific guidance that was coming out, and I'm not sure that we really have that wholesale quite yet. But the Secretary had indicated that they'll be looking to codify this and put it in a federal regulatory scheme. And maybe as that happens, we'll get a better sense of the changes the Secretary would like to make. And another thing, there's Illinois law that in place now that really has codified this for universities in Illinois. So even if we got different direction at the federal level in regulations, not statute, regulations, in Illinois, we're pretty well bound to most of the practices from the Obama era anyway.
All right, so next question, because we're running out of time.
I know.
This is where I wanted to spend the most time today, and we're not going to be able to do it. We've only got a couple of minutes left. You wrote an article about free speech. This
Yes.
is a nationwide subject. And I thought it was particularly interesting that it's so nice when people talk about things when they provide source material and facts for what they're trying to say. And the part that I found very interesting was this nationwide survey of 1,500 undergraduate students at four-year colleges conducted by John Villasenor, a Brookings Institute mm-hmm. senior fellow. Among the findings were that more than half of the respondents, these are college students, undergraduates, my understanding, and disrupting or shouting down a controversial speaker is the appropriate response. Likewise, 45% incorrectly believe the First Amendment doesn't protect hate speech, and 6 in 10 mistakenly believe the First Amendment requires that if a public university hosts an offensive speaker, someone with an opposing view must be brought in as well. Your sole article here, and this one citing from this, is the place where free speech is such a cherished item has now become free speech is under attack.
Well, you know, I was going to write that article no matter what, because it has been in the national conversation over these past few weeks, really since the Charlottesville incident. So I was going to write that article anyway to kind of, you know, state my premise that yes, while I understand the concerns that come with having truly an environment where all speech is heard, that we have a responsibility to ensure that's the case.
Free speaking is free thought.
Free speaking is free thought. And if we start getting into a situation where somebody is going to choose what can be said, we're no different than any dictatorship in the world. So anyway, I was going to make the statement that the best way to deal with speech that you don't like is to enter the arena and contribute more speech. To join in as a voice
but
and
yelling
put
a
your
bunch
opinion,
of words with
not,
hard K's
not trying
at
to
you,
shut people off.
Right? Well, you're Nazis. I mean, this whole thing that's going where you scream people down and you call every obscene name, a lot with hard K's.
Yeah,
you know,
I know,
right?
I know.
And it's not like universities have a corner on this market either. But when you point out in your bit that you had written here, I don't mean to dominion by bit,
no,
your
it's
article,
fine.
Your opinion that you had written here, I mean, you really take the time to point this out that, look, these universities and free speech, that, you know, Berkeley, you were pointing out this thing with Berkeley with the
yes,
free speech
yes,
week, which,
yes.
you know, and then on and on it goes where, you know, no, you're not going to be allowed to speak. I mean, University of Illinois didn't take Watson and Crick discovered
yes.
DNA
yes.
because they didn't like his
I know.
Opinions. At the University of Illinois didn't want a Nobel laureate to speak.
This stuff really gets to, and I'm not making a judgment about U of I have a degree from there, but this stuff does get to a level of ridiculousness at some point. And again, the purpose of my article, if somebody wants to read it, they can find it, go online, SIU System.
I'll share it on the Facebook
president.
Page now. All right, I'll just put it over there and
share like
it.
I say, I was going to write the article as I was working on it, that research that you just mentioned out of Brookings got published. And I said, well, I've got to include this. I'm going to be writing on it. So pulled it into the piece and published it last week. It's part of an internal electronic newsletter we share with all of our employees. But what that tells me is, obviously, one of our roles as a university, it's an implied role, it's a tacit role to some degree, is to, in addition to getting you a major that can get you a successful career and go out and be a good citizen, it's educating young men and women for release into the adult world. And part of this is looking at what we can do to provide education and background, opportunity to hear diverse groups to deal with this, shall we say, lack of understanding about what free speech entails, as evidenced in that that survey, and to try to address that.
Lack of critical thought.
Now, as you can well imagine, I was reading this morning the trade press in higher ed. So just like in media or any other business, we have a trade press, a couple of online things and that come out every morning. So now people are starting to shoot holes at that study. And some in the academic community are saying, well, that's not really a legitimate study. Students self-selected into it, and we can't really look at it.
Let's take a look at the Annenberg Public Policy Institute study. 1,000 adults, 26% of which could not name the three branches of government.
I heard you talking about that this morning.
One-third could not name any branch of government. There's a fundamental flaw in the education system, and it's crept in.
There is a group that... it has been out there for a number of years, a national organization, and I very much subscribe to this. They have their own political leanings and that type of thing. But I very much subscribe to kind of the basic notion that they have. We have to start teaching civics education again. We have to be about what it means, and I'm not talking just the K-12 system where I spent a lot of my life. We have a responsibility to that in higher education, to talk about what it means to be part of a commonweal, to talk about, citizen rights and responsibilities, for heaven's sakes, to understand the freedoms that are ensconced in the First Amendment, and to understand why they were put in the First Amendment and not the Ninth or Tenth, that these are the pillars that give us our liberty. And I worry that we've gotten far afield from that, and it's not like we can't teach other things too.
Right.
But we've got to have that as a cornerstone of being. And now, don't get upset, Tom. A liberally educated person. I'm not talking a political term.
Right.
It's what we talk about: a well-rounded education. Someone who can hold opposing views
in their minds
can
at the
analyze,
same time without going
who
nuts.
Has critical. Thought, as you just talked about, and if we, it is upon us, and as public institutions, I would say, our taxpayers should demand this. It's on us to be part of helping figure that out.
And it goes back to my basic philosophy here, that the love and lust equation. One makes the species worth propagating. One propagates the species, and that's where I interpret your liberal, a little bit of everything.
That's what I mean by that.
So that life is worth living.
Yes.
So I got it.
All right, man.
Hey, we spent a lot of time. I wish we had more.
I got to figure out how to get back to campus now.
I'm looking up.
I'll look at the traffic.
The traffic is really thinned out.
All right.
I'll talk to you about it in just a second. 8:46. I don't know how we're going to get the rest of the news and sports in, but we'll try really hard.